Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And as we've been following the devastation of hurricanes Irma and Harvey, which we will continue to do in about 30 minutes, we've missed some other news stories here which have rocked America's sense of security in other ways. Last week, the consumer credit reporting agency Equifax, as you have no doubt heard or maybe felt the personal effects of by now, suffered a massive data breach involving as many as 143 million Americans, putting our most sensitive information, social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, driver's licenses, at risk. And we're in this time where experts like to rate catastrophes or other events on a scale of 1 to the worst ever, right? National Weather Service called Harvey unprecedented and beyond anything experienced. Well, fraud analysts say on a scale of 1 to 10, in terms of risk to consumers, this hack into Equifax is a 10. NPR reported that it was the worst hack ever reported. And it's undoubtedly true. Equifax holds the most intimate details of Americans' financial lives, from our credit card information to the size of our medical bills. This was a massive breach of trust. Since the initial hack was reported on Thursday, people are still scrambling to figure out whether their information was compromised, as Equifax's ability to provide that information seems shaky at best. Lawsuits have already been filed. And outrage has been directed at the credit agency, obviously, for the initial blunder and for the inadequate safety services they're willing to provide in the wake of such a massive breach. At least that's what they're being accused of. The company's CEO, Rick Smith, says it needs to do more. He said this in a video statement.
I deeply regret this incident, and I apologize to every affected consumer. And while we've made significant investments in cybersecurity, we have more to do, and we will.
Maybe that lands as nothing more than platitudinous words from the CEO of Equifax. A lot of financial experts are saying if you're a victim of the hack, a lot of the cleanup work will have to come from you and not to rely on the company itself. Well, here to talk to all of us about how to go about doing that daunting task and about the larger issues at hand regarding the hack into Equifax, and we can take your calls, questions, seeking advice, or talking about the larger issue, is Tara Siegel-Bernard, personal finance reporter for The New York Times. Hi, Tara. Thanks so much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And again, listeners, if you think you've been affected or aren't sure you've been affected or aren't sure what to do to change certain passwords or anything else, Tara will take your calls, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. First, can you just give us a little more on the breadth of the information compromised in this hack?
Sure. There have been a lot of big breaches. It felt for a while like there was a breach every month. But what sets this one apart is just the vast amount of really personal data that has been compromised, up to 143 million American consumers, including, you know, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, names, birth dates, addresses, credit card numbers for 209,000 consumers, and then other personal information that people use when they file disputes with the credit bureaus, the big three credit bureaus, for 182,000 people were also taken. So, you know, if you think about, you know, if an identity thief wanted to go to one place to get everything, kind of one-stop shopping, the credit bureaus is basically where you would go. You know, any of the big three. Equifax has been targeted. They're the big bureau involved in this breach, but there's also TransUnion and Experian. But it's basically a one-stop shop for thieves.
And let's take what I think right off the bat is a sort of bottom-line comment that people are just coming to grips with from Amy in Manhattan. Amy, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I'm sorry. I'm having...
Yeah. Amy, go.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I
go ahead.
I forgot I've been having trouble. Yeah. you know, what strikes me is that this is something, you know, we usually hear about computer security, you know, you have a terms of service that you can accept or not. You don't have to sign up, but nobody signs up for these credit bureaus.
Exactly. So, yeah. Tara, my own first thought upon reading of this hack was, oh, well, at least this doesn't affect me. I've never gotten a credit report through Equifax. Wrong, right?
Wrong. Yeah, I mean, they really have consumers over a barrel. You can't take your business elsewhere because as consumers, we're not direct customers of the big credit bureaus. They get their information from the big banks, credit card companies, insurers, you know, financial services firms. They hand their data over to the credit bureaus who then, you know, collect it and kind of compile it into a file on, you know, the vast majority of Americans. They have more than 200 million files on consumers, and the consumers aren't the ones providing the information. So you can't, you're really, the only ones that kind of have some power in this equation are, you know, Congress, I suppose, and then the financial services firms themselves. You know, if they lose confidence in the bureaus, they could potentially, you know, exert some pressure on them to change their ways or something.
Susie and Darianne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susie.
Hi. We were definitely hacked. We had a credit card. Someone spent about $2,000 on our credit card. But
whoops, did we lose you? Go ahead.
Can
I'm sorry.
Me?
Yeah, you can continue.
Can
we had a little.
Me?
We had a little problem. You're back.
Okay. Equifax says that they can't give us any information until September 13th. I'm just wondering how I go about finding out if our Social Security was implicated and driver's license and everything else.
And you're sure that it was tied to this attack, this breach?
It was. Our credit card was with Chase, and Chase got in touch with us and said that it was definitely compromised.
Wow. Well, the you did the right thing by obviously, or they contacted you. So Chase, I'm sure, is on it, and you know that you shouldn't experience any financial losses. But to get to your other questions about the Social Security, I mean, it's really hard to know. What I would do if I were you is immediately, if you haven't done this already, freeze your credit reports by going to only one website called annualcreditreport.com.
Okay.
And you can get a copy of each of your credit reports, and I would just kind of scour them and just, you know, go through them very closely and make sure that there's no inaccurate information there. If there is, you can file a dispute through each of the credit bureaus. In fact, I believe if there's inaccurate information on one of your reports, I believe the bureaus then share that information with the other two, so you don't have to do it three times. But after you kind of study your reports and make sure there's nothing wrong there, I would go to that website that I just mentioned, and they will direct you to each of the three, TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, and they will give you instructions on how to freeze your credit. And what that means is, if a thief tries to impersonate you and open credit in your name, they will not be able to. The first thing a bank or a credit card company is going to do is check your credit, make sure you're, you know, a good credit, and they will not be able to do that because your files will have been frozen.
Susie, good luck. Tara, what was that website again?
annualcreditreport.com. There's also another website that Equifax has set up, and it's equifaxsecurity2017.com. And there, I would also suggest signing up there, although there's been a series of issues with the site and the information provided on it. And you need to enter the last six digits of your Social Security number. So you're handing over more personal information to the site that just betrayed your trust.
That's ironic.
So a lot of people are going to have trouble, you know, getting over that. But once you do, they will sign you up for a free year of credit monitoring They've been criticized for, you know, making it only a year because this is going to be an ongoing problem. As one source said to me, your Social Security number only expires when you do. So that's not something that, that goes away or can be changed, at least to my knowledge. That's something that we... And so that site will, you could... the credit monitoring also includes the ability to turn on and off your Equifax report, but you really should be able to, you really should be freezing all of them. And in fact, my colleague Ron Lieber just reported this morning with a story that the big three companies do charge for freezes, but Equifax is going to waive those fees for 30 days. So now's a good time to do it.
And I read that the website that Equifax set up, which purported to determine whether people's data was compromised, after visitors entered those six digits of a Social Security number and other information, you wrote, it offered only vague responses saying personal information was not impacted or that it may have been impacted. And by Friday, your colleague at the Times, Ron Lieber, who you just mentioned, wrote that he figured Equifax has no earthly idea who's affected by the breach.
Right.
Has that changed since Friday?
It has, I believe, well, let's see, on Friday, when I entered my information, I got two answers when entering the same name and Social Security. I believe that since then, they say they have tightened that up, and hopefully by now you should be just getting the right response. I believe they sent a note about that last night, but yes, it's been pretty inconsistent.
You got two separate responses. I guess it didn't know which Tara Siegel Bernard you are.
And right, right.
For those of you just tuning in, she is the Tara Siegel Bernard, who is the personal finance reporter for the New York Times. And she's here to give us advice on what to do because of this huge Equifax hack that exposed personal information of an estimated 143 million Americans. 212-433-WNYC. If you want any of that advice, or if you have anything else to say or ask, 212-433-9692. Dustin in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I just want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
Just very quickly, I just read in the Times, and as you probably know about this, it says 3 days after Equifax discovered the breach, three top Equifax executives sold Equifax shares or exercised options to dispose of stock worth about $1.8 million. That's unbelievable. I mean, that's icing on the cake. That's all I want to say.
Yes. The optics of that are not good. Yes, and that was something that I wrote about last night. These three executives, including the company's chief financial officer, John Gamble, sold shares worth $1.8 million after the breach was discovered, but before it was reported. As of last night, several the leaders of the House Financial Services Committee wrote a letter more than a dozen questions to the chief executive officer of Equifax demanding answers.
The question there is, did these Equifax executives know or not, right? If they knew, then it's insider trading and they should probably go to jail. If they didn't know, it might be an unfortunate for optics coincidence.
Right. Exactly. It's too early to draw any conclusions, but it just adds to the company's misery and consumers' outrage.
Do we need to change our passwords on other things?
I mean, that's never a bad idea. I don't believe in this specific breach that they recovered passwords or got access to passwords, but they did, credit card numbers and other personal information. So, it's not a bad idea to change your passwords periodically anyway,
Like, could we learn through third party, I guess the earlier caller from Darianne already did, but learn from third parties that our information was compromised on Equifax. Like, again, to use myself as an example, on Friday, I was notified by Apple of a fraud alert, somebody doing something inside my Apple ID. Now, for all of my years using, you know, iTunes and all of that, that's never happened before. So I have no idea whether it was a result of Equifax or just a coincidence that that happened on Friday. They didn't say one way or the other. But should people be on the lookout for that kind of thing from their credit card companies, from, you know, eBay, from anything else they use?
Absolutely. I would just be careful, you know, now that there's more, even more information out there, and let's face it, that we had to assume that they already had most of anything, you know, thieves had a lot of our information anyway from all these other breaches. In fact, we have something on our website where you can see how many breaches you might have been involved with. But yeah, we should be answering, you know, when the credit card company calls, answer those calls and see what they have to say. But also be aware of phishing attacks with a PHI, because they're, you know, we'll be getting emails from what looks like your bank, perhaps. And really what they're doing is phishing for even more information. Huh. So you really want to be careful when you do respond to those calls. If you do get one from, you know, a legitimate bank or credit card company, you just want to, you know, be sure that it is. Go hover over the sender in the email and see if it is indeed from a real address or one that looks fake or that's one, you know, digit or letter off. You have to be hyper aware, hyper vigilant when we respond to those things.
That's a really good tip, to be on the alert in the aftermath for these phishing operations and to hover over the sender's email so you can determine if it's really, you know, bankofamerica.com or something fake, right?
Right, bankofamericas.com, or, you know, they're really good. Some of these that I've even received personally they're pretty convincing, and it's scary.
So that's a great example. That's how close it can be. I just pulled that out of the air, Bank of America, and you said somebody might be fishing for you under the fake address of bankofamericas.com. A lot of people wouldn't even notice that.
Right. Yeah, they're pretty sophisticated.
Erica in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Erica.
Hi, yes, I wanted to correct something that you may have corrected since it was stated, but I went and froze my credit on the three agency sites that are listed at the website that your guest mentioned, and there's no fee for New York State residents. So
that's
no
a good
reason
point.
Not to do it. I think in
right,
other states
yeah.
there is a fee and it's quite low, but I wanted to make sure that people aren't being discouraged from doing this just because of the cost.
Right. It varies by state. So in New York, and maybe are you looking at Equifax? Because Equifax did just, wherever they do charge, they just waived those fees for 30 days.
Of the listeners are in the New York City or state area, and I did not pay at any of them, and I just went through the process. So for listeners,
yes, no, that's a
do it
really,
anyway,
thanks.
Regardless.
Great.
Yes, thanks for pointing that out. When you lift the freeze, like let's say you need to apply for car insurance, like I recently did, when you try to get a quote online, you won't be able to do so if your credit files are frozen. And that is the kind of the price we pay in terms of time to have to go and unfreeze. But when you do thaw those files for, say, a day or two or however long you choose, because they do give you the ability to choose a time frame, they will charge, I can't remember what it is exactly, but it's like $5 or $7 every time you lift the freeze. It does cost in New York because I've paid it myself. To actually install it, it shouldn't cost anything at all.
Erica, thanks for that. We're offering you advice for what to do now after the big Equifax hack last week with Tara Siegel-Bernard, personal finance reporter for The Times, and Linda in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you? I went to Equifax website immediately after hearing about the hack when they said they were offering free year free service, but I found out from the news reports almost immediately that I had, by signing up, I would give up my right to sue for damages if I was hacked, that I had to agree to arbitration.
Yes, that is a really good point, and that led to a lot of outrage on social media, and I believe the New York Attorney General also chimed in on that. And in the days after, Equifax has since removed that clause, so customers no longer have to agree to waive their rights to legal action and accept a mandatory, arbitration settlement. Now that is, consumers no longer have to worry about
that's
that.
That's another really, really good piece of information that I'm glad got out here that I didn't know when we started talking. So and Linda, thank you for calling with that. So under what circumstances would you expect that an individual consumer would sue Equifax? Or is it just that we're not giving up our right to be part of a class action suit?
Right. Well, now there are at least two or three class action suits that have been filed. There were two consumers in Oregon, and I can't recall the other state, but they are already, the attorneys are on it. So they're, the class action suits. I'm not sure if they'll, exactly what will happen or how that will pan out, but there, at least two or three have been filed already.
Is there a way for the future to avoid doing business with Equifax or other major credit scoring companies if we don't want to?
I don't think so, because as we were talking about earlier, we are not there direct consumers. They do sell some services direct to consumers. So you can, I suppose, go to an independent credit monitoring firm if you decided that's something that you want. A lot of experts say that you do not need that because you can just check your credit reports for free every year. You could even kind of space them out so that every 3 months or every 4 months you're checking one credit report. So you could kind of do your own credit monitoring. But, there are others that are independent. But as far as, getting a loan, if you want to get a loan, the one thing that they do is make it, probably the credit bureaus make the process, make that getting that loan a little faster because they've compiled all the information in one place. They take that information and then synthesize it into a three-digit credit score. So our credit scores, that's something we haven't talked about. Our credit scores are based on those credit reports. So without those reports, there are no credit scores. And, those scores are essentially the key to credit in this country. So it really is hard to not do business since we're not their direct consumers.
Dina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dina. And by the way, to your point, listener Andrew just tweeted, we are not Equifax customers. We're the product.
Right.
That's right, right?
Very good point, yes.
It's like the difference between public and commercial radio, right? In commercial radio, listeners are not the customers. They are the product who the radio stations sell to the advertisers who are the actual customers. But Dina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dina.
Oh, my God, I'm glad I got you. First of all, Brian, for you with Apple, that happened to me on Friday, don't tap on those links, okay, because that's a fraud. That happened to me a few weeks ago as well as on Friday, and I called the company. They said it's not for them. Like your guest said, They're very good at making you believe that it's a fraud. It's really not. Just ignore that. AOL, I don't know if you have AOL, they have a phishing site. Whenever you get any kind of spam or anything that's fraudulent looking, you tap on that and you forward it to them, and they'll take care of these people. They have a big investigation. That's number one. Number two, with regard to, because this just all happened to me just within the last couple of weeks, I'm part of this whole big investigation with the NYPD. So also, you don't freeze your reports. You put a fraud alert. It's much better for the consumer. Doesn't cost anything. It's for 90 days. And this way, if you need, like with me, I have a small business. I need my lines of credit. If I want to apply for more credit, I don't have to go through this whole rigmarole because I was a victim of identity theft. So I would look into this. Two options, this, according to the police department, there's fraud and freeze. My advice would be to fraud it, not freeze it. And with regard to my situation, there's some insider inside of this big department store in Manhattan. I don't want to mention the name because of this whole investigation going on, but they've been very good. They're working with us. They have a rogue employee. Now, what they do is they open up a new account like online, because I don't do anything online because I was a victim of identity theft 6 years ago. They open up an account, a new account, like the guest said, with an additional number. They use your name, and somehow they're able to get in, and they have all your information, and they call it in to the store. They're not there in person. And this particular department store, there were 6 red flags regarding my account because I hadn't used the account in 2 years.
Right.
And then what they do, the chutzpah of these people, they're very good at this. What they do is they call the credit card division of the department store, and they request a higher line of credit when they max out your credit amount.
Dina,
it's just horrible.
Thank you for all those scenarios. And Tara, the particular one that she said at the beginning, the difference between calling in a fraud and calling in a freeze, is that a thing that you know about?
Yeah, you know, you should turn on the fraud alerts. That's a good point. I would definitely, you know, flip that switch on. The only issue with not doing it, and as somebody who needs to access their credit line continuously, that's, you know, it is hard to turn the freezes on and off, or not hard, but just really inconvenient. However, with the fraud, you're kind of, if there has been a fraud and you are alerted, you're learning after the fact, whereas you could think of the freeze as the preventative measure and the fraud is, okay, now I know that it's happened. So, and maybe you find out that they, you know, took your credit card and racked up, you know, $3,000, but maybe they also opened a credit card in your name that you don't know about, and that would be possible if you didn't have the freeze. So I would suggest doing both. And the other thing with the fraud alerts is I don't think you could keep them on forever and ever. Whereas a freeze, you're in control. You lift it when you need to. Whereas the fraud alerts might last only a specific number of days or months.
Oh, that's another thing I'm really glad came up, because I didn't know a lot of that. I'm sure a lot of other people didn't. To finish up, people are outraged at the lack of regulations in place to monitor credit rating companies now that this Equifax has brought more of it to light. In an article you wrote for The Times, you interviewed a former director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, thank you, Elizabeth Warren, who said, credit reporting agencies are the plumbing of our financial system, but are much less regulated than many banks. In what ways and why?
Yes, well, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has some supervisory and enforcement authority over the credit bureaus, but that mostly deals with keeping those reports accurate. The credit rating agencies have been long criticized for not keeping accurate information or not doing enough to resolve errors when they do arise. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has made headway on improving the accuracy of those reports, and that has been a very good thing. But the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau generally leaves the data privacy enforcement to the Federal Trade Commission, and there, the FTC is largely in charge of data privacy. The problem there is that the FTC lacks the authority to impose big fines, so they haven't really made a lot of headway there. And
so is that on Congress?
Yes, yes. And there are several legislators, introducing new bills and thinking about different ways to address this. You know, there's talk of a, you know, federal breach notification, and, you know, other rules, applying some of the bank-like rules on online. So it remains to be seen what the response to this will be.
And as far as the political responsiveness to this in Congress or the White House, now that the Equifax breach has happened, I mean, as you know, the Trump administration, probably more than anything else they've been able to accomplish since taking office, they're in the business of abolishing regulations.
Right. Yes. So it's not the most friendly administration for more regulation. But, you know, you would think this is something that's in the interest of the financial services industry as well. And they've lobbied for less regulation there. But if the banks can't evaluate people properly and figure out who is going to pay back their bills and who is not, then they're going to lose money. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, in the best interest to make sure that that this is working for both the banks and consumers, because they're both involved.
Regulate me, please. We'll see if they actually say that. We'll see. Tara Siegel-Bernard, personal finance reporter for the New York Times. So informative, so helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.